The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we are back. And Ed Randall is good enough to spend even more time with Sweeney and the Wise. Ed, thank you very much. And we want to talk about the Yankees with you now. So they played the Angels today. They won their sixth game in a row. CC finally had a decent performance and got a win. But more importantly, Ed, Mark Teixeira usually takes about 6 weeks to get going with the Yankees. I almost refer to him as the groundhog. But this year, 17 homers and 45 ribbies. What are your thoughts on Teixeira and some of the other bats in the lineup?
I think he is as surprised as anybody else, Teixeira himself, because of his historic slow starts. And frankly, he's been a godsend, a lifesaver for that offense. We're not only their offense struggling, but all offenses around baseball continue to struggle like they did last year. And he has done a phenomenal job. And I thought that with the wrist injury, which is usually chronic and saps players of their home run strength, that that would be a tremendous factor. But fortunately for him, he plays in a very friendly ballpark when he bats left-handed, and it's that has certainly helped his production.
Hey, I want to ask you a question about the A-Rod. And I don't want to go too deep into it, but to me, I think it's kind of sad now the way A-Rod's playing this year and the see his potential he's had at this age. And I don't know why he used the steroids what he used, but I think it ruined his career going to the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. But I don't think he needed to do it at this point. I'm just he's having a great beginning of the season, and I just don't understand why he did this. But what he did. But it's I don't think he's got a shot of getting into the Hall of Fame now. Do you?
No, I there's no chance that that's going to happen. I think he's deader if it's possible. And even Bonds and Sosa and that bunch, and there's no chance that he's going to go in. It's just really unfortunate that as you see him go by these names like Garrigan Ruth,
right,
with RBIs, he's coming up on 3,000 hits. This has been one of the greatest players that we have ever seen.
Yeah,
Barry Bonds was one of the greatest players that we have ever seen, but you have to parse the statistics that he's accumulated through the years and say, would those statistics have been accumulated had he not been on performance-enhancing drugs? Because we will never know for how many years he was on performance-enhancing drugs.
Right, correct. I agree with you. But, I mean, this year I'm assuming he's not on anything because he doesn't want to get, they're testing him and he doesn't want to get in trouble again. And he's having a decent year so far. That's what I don't understand. I mean, and at his age as it is now, He still is hitting the ball. It just doesn't make any sense to me for him doing all that prior when he was a very talented young prospect and kid coming up. He was fantastic. Like you said, he was, I always loved A-Rod from the beginning. But it's disheartening to me that he did what he did.
You know what, Ed? I'm going to talk about this now since we're on A-Rod as we are talking of his steroid use. And I'm going to bring up a guy that you loved since you mentioned Tom Seaver. And I'm going to bring up the guy I loved because I actually, in terms of historical significance, I have a 1993 baseball almanac. And the top 20 home run hitters as of 1993. And I think steroids really got into baseball maybe a little bit before that. Late 80s, I just saw how it was in college sports. Olympics, you go back as far as, in terms of what we're recalling, the 84 Olympics with the track team. With Ben Johnson in 88, I mean, it's been around. But I thought it was definitely in baseball, late 80s, and certainly in the early 90s. So baseball almanac, I remember seeing, the top 20 home run hitters of all time in 1993, and the only guy that wasn't in the Hall of Fame was Dave Kingman. Now, and he's not a Hall of Famer, but he's one of the best home run hitters I ever saw. So now, I always think about that, and I remember, it wasn't an interview, Tom Seaver was still doing games for the Mets, and he's talking to Ralph Kiner, and they're up in Montreal. So the Nationals were still playing in Montreal at the time. And they were talking about why at the top of the foul pole, which is red, they had to paint the big red line on the Olympic Stadium, the cement wall. So Tom Seaver tells a story about Kingman hitting the ball completely out of Olympic Stadium. Said it was one of the great things he ever seen. And he said the umpires called it a foul ball, but it was definitely fair. And that's why they had to draw this line. So then he gets into talking about Mark McGuire somehow. okay, and Mark McGuire's personal trainer. And, you know, he's on St. Louis at the time, Mark McGuire. So he's talking about Mark McGuire, and he talked to his trainer. He's talking about all these workouts, right? So then he starts talking about McGuire with Canseco, the Bash Brothers in Oakland, because McGuire brought the trainer from Oakland to St. Louis. So he's talking to this guy. He starts asking about McGuire when he was in Oakland with Canseco and the Bash Brothers, and contrasting their workouts and the size and the strength. And then he says, because Siva was a big fan of Dave King when he spent a lot of time. I guess he did a lot of work at Siva's house in Connecticut, helped him, you know, build things or whatever when he was doing work. So he tells Connie, he goes, you know what? He goes, I remembered that when those guys came up with the A's, that's when Kingman finished up his career in Oakland. He goes, so I asked the trainer, he goes, well, how does Kingman relate to these guys in terms of his strength and stuff? Because he goes, because I always remembered how strong Dave was. He goes, and the trainer looked at me steely-eyed and just said, not even in the class. And Siva goes, so I said to the trainer, he goes, oh, Kingman's not in those guys' class. He goes, no, you don't understand. He goes, those guys weren't in Kingman's class. He said that the trainer that McGuire had told him that Kingman had the most raw power that he ever saw in a ball player. All right? I'm not making this up. This was on a WOR broadcast. I remember hearing it. And then Siva just goes, he goes, you know what? I believe the guy, too, because I remember when I used to do work around my house in Connecticut, he's like, I would call Dave Kingman before I called, like, five guys on the Mets. And he would just pick things up, one in each arm. And that's what actually made me even love him more post-retirement, was that I saw everything that was going on with performance enhancers, and I realized just how powerful Kingman was in a natural sense. Because, like you said, his college coach discovered him. You know, he was a pitcher in college, but his college coach discovered him as a hitter. And that's why he wanted to be drafted as such and went to the Giants. But he hit some of the longest homers I have ever seen in person or on TV. And I think I love him even more now because of what these guys go through with the performance enhancements and trying to get that edge. Like John keeps asking you, why would this guy do that? But these guys, they all want that edge, that big contract. They want to be, when they get into fitness nowadays, just like everything, you know, makes progress in technology, these guys want to be, they want to, it's not the 12%, they want 5% body fat. They want to be that much quicker, powerful. I mean, do you get the same feeling? And this is what I've watched in baseball and other sports, right?
They were just they just became Michelin men with what it was that they did.
Right.
Kingman was just raw power. Once at Shea Stadium, I don't know if it was with the Mets or against the Mets, he hit a school bus behind the old left field bullpen.
Yeah.
He was just phenomenally powerful, just incredible. And I believe to this day the last person ever to have hit 30 home runs in a season and never be and not be offered a contract the following year.
It's amazing. He has. You talked about Ted Williams before. I think Ted Williams last year he had 27 or 29 homers. Dave Kingman has the record for most homers.
Right?
35. His last year with Oakland, the record for the most homers by a major leaguer in his last full season. 35 home runs. I mean, if he was a DH his entire career, Ed, he would have hit over 600 homers no problem at all. That's how powerful the guy is. I got a 77 Mets yearbook. I don't know if you collect yearbooks at all. But if you have a 77, I remember it because it was the one, the 77 yearbook profiled the 76 All-Star game from the previous year. And that was the one where Kingman made it with Greg Luzinski and everybody else was from the Cincinnati Reds. And that it was so exciting because he was pitching. Tom Seaver was pitching in the game and Kingman was starting. And everybody else was like on the Cincinnati Reds. And in the profile of the yearbook for Kingman, they like nonchalantly just wrote, Kingman blast 615-foot home run out of Wrigley. And they gave a date in 76. And I'm like, how could somebody not celebrate that to this day? Can you even fathom that kind of distance in a home run?
Like a Mickey Mantle shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was phenomenally powerful.
But I heard he wasn't liked, though.
He was disliked by the media.
Like,
I know.
Media didn't like him.
It's sad.
I think that's why. That tells it all right?
Well, he sent he gift wrapped a dead rat to a female reporter when he was with the Oakland A's.
Yeah. I heard it was a live rat.
Oh, man. Well, maybe it was. But regardless, who does that? You
know, I know.
That's a real twisted thing to do.
Yeah, that's very twisted. I would never even think of doing anything like that. Yes,
yeah, I heard it was a live rat, and he put with a rope, they put a note on the tail for the lady. I think the writer's name was Susan Slusser or something. I don't remember her name, but he put Susan is a rat or something like that. Yeah.
And that's who it was.
It's a shame, too, that he did that because I've met him a couple times and he's been really nice the two times. I met him when I was 7 years old and when I was 37. And he was so nice to me that it's hard to listen to some of those stories because you don't want to hear that about a guy that you were a fan of, you know? So I guess I got to find comfort in, you know, that it's not like O.J. Simpson as my favorite athlete or someone else that got in trouble, you know, in a worse regard, let's say, right? I mean, I don't know. I wish the memories of the media regarding him were better because I think he gets overlooked in terms of, like, the great all-time power guys. So, but let's not harp on him too much longer. I wanted to get your thoughts on some other things, Ed. And the first topic I wanted to talk about to you is collisions at home plate. Because when I was a catcher growing up, I got to tell you, Ed, even as a 10-year-old in Little League, I used to love when kids tried to run me over at home plate. You know, I was a physical guy. I played football, played hockey growing up. But, you know, nowadays with the coddling of athletes, not just in baseball, but football and hockey, you name it, concussions, all this other stuff. What are your thoughts on collisions at home plate?
Well, I was very dubious about how they were going to enforce it. And we now have gone really two seasons where there have been no collisions at home plate that have involved injury.
Right.
And the catchers have made the adjustment of clearing the baseline for the oncoming runner. And I'm sure there are many catchers that are spinning in their graves from previous generations that this is the way in which the game is being played. But it really was a safety issue, and it was born out of Buster Posey's ugly injury
right.
a couple of years ago.
Right,
but
yeah.
I talked to a couple of veteran catchers the week after that, guys that I've known for many, many years,
right.
and they blame Buster. They don't blame the runner on Miami, that Buster did not properly cover the plate, and he left himself vulnerable. Having said that, they're doing it for the good of the game, and the rule seems to be working.
Yeah, I think it's definitely protecting them. I guess because yeah. I was raised to be tough by my dad. I guess I couldn't relate to it. And I would have been one of those guys. If you were interviewing me, I would have been blaming the catcher more than the guy that, you know, slid hard into him. But I'm not a big fan of it. But at least if the safety stats go up, then that's a good thing. I understand how society is with sports nowadays.
Well, the game has changed. I mean, I don't know if this generation of runners would take out the catchers the way it used to be
right.
in the days of Lou Piniella coming into Carl V.
Oh yeah.
They're different. They're yeah. It's a much different game. I mean, look at what's going on. Look at what is going on out at second base.
Yeah.
You never ever see guys trying to take guys out like they used to when
Never.
We were growing up.
Right.
Al McCray wanted to take Willie Randolph out onto River Avenue one night.
Yeah, take
McCray
him.
Was with Kansas City.
Yeah, certainly into left field. I remember that.
There's no contact out at second base anymore.
And when there is, there definitely is a bench brawl because that's what
yeah.
happened with Kansas City this year.
There's a bench brawl.
When Escobar
right, yeah.
got taken out on a slide, I think it was against Oakland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
but they're not. But you don't see that anymore. The guys who just come out there and just Frank Robinson, Donnie Baylor, Hal McCray, all these guys.
Right.
That's the way the game was played. Was played.
You know why I think, Ed, I have a problem with this whole thing with collisions at home plate? I think it's because I still see a lot of pitches throwing high inside towards the head. And I got to be honest with you. I played baseball a long time. You know, I didn't go past high school, but I played varsity. I played, you know, at a good enough level. You know, I just wasn't able to play in college. I played hockey instead. But I've never agreed at any level with throwing it at a guy's head. And I still hear guys talk about that as being a good thing. Like, I own the inside of that plate. Am I wrong, or do you... Like, how do you look at that? If you're going to look at the way we're trying to protect catches and collisions at home plate, how do you view throwing at somebody's head? I understand throwing, you know, at a guy's at his legs, you know, upper part of his butt or in the rib area to send a message, that kind of stuff sometimes, although I really don't. But throwing at a guy's head, don't you find that to be a bit like just crossing the line? Because a lot of guys still don't. They still think that's part of the game. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it is out of line, but I respectfully disagree with regard to the frequency of it. I think it's very, very rare. I think the getaway, I think it happens only because the pitch has gotten away from the pitcher. This is not the way in which the game was played when I was growing up, where guys were making sure, pitchers were making sure that the hitters' feet were moving.
Right.
They were throwing inside. They wanted to own that inside part of the plate. And now, the way the rules have been restructured, you as a pitcher are not permitted to throw inside anymore because the umpires will start warning you. They'll warn both sides. And that's put the umpires in an untenable position of having to be psychologists, whether or not did this guy throw the ball at the guy intentionally or not. And then you get these, warnings, and it's a bad rule. And because if, in fact, there is intent, then the first guy has a free shot, and there's no retaliation. But there's no retaliation anymore. I mean, when was the last time you saw a guy get hit after somebody hit the home run? That was pro forma.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, I worked with Rico Petrocelli on Saturday morning. Rico got hit all the time when Yastrzemski hit home runs.
Yeah.
He batted after Yastrzemski.
That was protocol,
The game has changed tremendously.
No, I agree with you. I don't want you to get the wrong impression. I wasn't trying to make it like everybody has a Don Drysdale or a Bob Gibson where if you even look at him the wrong way, he's going to put you down on your ass. I wasn't trying to say that at all.
Those guys would get thrown out of games regularly
right.
if they pitched with the same personality that they did in the 60s. That's not happening today. That's not happening today.
Yeah, no, you know.
And frankly, you know, the when you look back on that, why should Rico Petrocelli get pinged when Carl Yastrzemski hits a home run? You know, the law of the jungle. That was just so stupid.
Yeah,
but that was the
I
way
agree.
He would
No,
I've
always found it reprehensible throwing at guys like that. I agree with you. And today, you know, you mentioned with how the umpires have to handle it. You know, the biggest problem you see today is when the umpire gives a warning right away the next game, as soon as the guy comes inside or plunks a guy, then the other manager's like, I don't get a pound of flesh before you give out warnings, and then they flip out and get kicked out of the game for arguing with him for doing it too soon, right? I mean, you see that a number of times.
Well, and then there's another issue here, which is the players, since they've been in Little League, dig into the center of the earth, and they have no capability of getting out of the way of an inside pitch.
Right.
They can't get out of the way.
Yeah.
And because of, part of it is also the infrequency in which they have to get out of the way. And that too, has been a problem. But I'm going to tell you something. I've always felt this way. There is no way that Mark McGwire would have had that year, Sammy Sosa, those 4 years, because those balls were on tees that they were hitting.
Yeah.
There is no way, if those guys were playing in the 60s and 70s, there is not a chance with facing guys like Seaver and Kuzman and Fergie Jenkins and Bill Hand and Gibson and Drysdale and go on down the line back into the 60s, there is not a chance that they would have hit that many home runs in the season. No way.
No, you're right. You're right. And for different reasons. But Hank Greenberg, right, he had a great chance that 1 year. What was he, at 58? And they were like, there ain't no way he's getting
it. That's right.
They
weren't pitching.
I mean, different reasons involved. I mean, a lot of the religious bias with him, I'm sure of, but you're absolutely right with the stuff with the 60s and those kind of pitches and how it relates to what McGwire and Sosa were able to do. I agree with you 100%.
Nobody ever hit those guys.
Yeah.
They never got hit.
Yeah, and then they all started wearing body armor anyway, like Barry Bonds, right?
Bonds with that big elbow.
And hanging over the plate in which they were and wearing the body armor and everything.
Oh, diving into pitches. No, I know. You know, and before the hitting batters, we talked about, you know, running guys over at the plate. So I have to, in this last segment here, I have to ask you about Pete Rose and the All-Star game coming up that he's able to participate in. But I've always been a big believer, and I want to get your thoughts on this. In terms of Pete Rose for the Hall of Fame, people are like, oh, well, you think he belongs in the Hall of Fame? I'm like, well, he is a Hall of Famer.
4,000 hits.
Performance-wise, the way he played the game, he is a Hall of Famer. My only problem with the whole issue is, I just say this to people, because this has carried on for so long now, 15, 20 years. My only point is, if you're going to bend the rules or make an exception, then you make an exception for all of them. Meaning, if you're going to do it for Pete Rose, then you do it for Shoeless Joe Jackson. But I personally don't think you can do it for just one guy. What are your thoughts on this whole thing? Because Pete Rose has been campaigning for this for years, whether openly or quietly. How do you feel about this whole issue?
Well, I think there's two issues here. One is about his reinstatement in the game, and the other is about his eligibility for the Hall of Fame, and those are separate stories. Faye Vinson did my show, and he was the deputy commissioner at the time in which Commissioner Giamatti, may God rest his soul, suspended Pete for life. And he is adamant about the fact that as Faye said on my show, the Messiah couldn't get 12 of the 16 votes off the Veterans Committee. So it doesn't look like that's going to happen with Pete Rose. So I don't think he's going to the Hall of Fame. As far as the reinstatement is concerned, they knew when they awarded, when Bud awarded the All-Star game for this year to Cincinnati, he knew that this was going to bring Pete Rose front and center about, well, what are we going to do? Well, now Bud has retired, and now it's Rob Manfred's issue, and he is studying it, and will study it thoroughly and wants to learn as much information as he possibly can. It seems to me that if for some reason Rose was to be reinstated into the game, well, then throw away the rule that has put him on the permanently ineligible list. Then he was not permanently ineligible. And the fact is that, and this was, I had the great good fortune to have not only Faye Vincent on my show at the same moment with John Dowd, who wrote the report. All you have to do, you can Google the Dowd report and go only 5 pages. In a report that they say is as thick as the old Manhattan phone book, just go 5 pages. You can stop reading right there. He was guilty, period, end of story. I have no sympathy for him. He lied for the first 15 years of his suspension
right, until
he wrote the book in 2000. I never bet on baseball. I never bet on baseball. I never bet on baseball. 2004, I bet on baseball. What happens if everybody loses their minds, puts the guy in the Hall of Fame, and on his deathbed he goes, hey, you know what? I got something to tell you before I go. I did bet on the Cincinnati Reds to lose while I was the manager.
That's horrible.
Oh, my God. Then what?
Yep. You can't do it.
No, I'm sorry. Nobody has done more with less God-given talent than this guy. This guy, they should show tape, videotape of this guy to every single kid who gets drafted tomorrow into professional baseball. This is the way the game should be played. I joke with Rico about the fact Pete Rose slid through his legs while Rico was straddling the third base bag in the 1975 World Series. This guy was phenomenal to watch. He was great. However, he says, when I started the minor leagues, I spent 7 years in the minor leagues. I started Elmira, New York, in Dunfield, this old, decrepit ballpark. There was this huge sign in our home team clubhouse, and it was the same sign in the visiting clubhouse. And all it said was, it was a long sign that explained the prohibition against gambling, not against cheating on your wife, not against drinking, not against drugs, not against performance-enhancing drugs, just gambling. Pete Rose said he never read the sign. He went into those clubhouses every single day, his days in the minor leagues. That sign was there every single day that he played 20-some-odd years in the major leagues. There's the sign. He never saw the sign. He never read the sign. Please, stop insulting us.
Yeah.
He's not a sympathetic character. But baseball will have to do something to satisfy the crowd in Cincinnati because he's their guy. They love him just the way San Francisco loves Bond, and they somehow think that these guys are victims.
It's just crazy.
You know, Ed, I couldn't have said it better myself. And I we have a topic, best players in the last 40 years. I sent you an email about it. We have to talk to you about that after this break. You have to stay with us. But I just want to emphatically state that I was trying to be nice about posing the question, but you answered it. And with the passion that I was hoping for, because most of the time I have to argue with people, you are without question the best guest I have ever had. Finally a guy, Sweeney, who uses his head and doesn't make exceptions for Pete Rose. Because
right.
I agree with everything you said. I don't have to add my thoughts to it. Go ahead, John.
I was you're talking about catching. Look at Pete Rose and the All-Star game ended Ray Fosse's career. Back in the day.
Right, but your thoughts on Rose are exactly how I feel. And you said it at the end the right way. He is not the kind of guy, personality-wise, in any facet that you want to get behind. That's how I look at that. And I agree with you. All right, so you could save us for the next segment, right, Ed?
Sure.
All right,
Thank you, Ed. Quick break, folks. Great job.
The great Ed Randall.
Great.
Telling it like
we
it
are
is.
So lucky.
He's with us for an important best athletes in baseball of the last 40 years. That's the segment coming up.
And call us. You have to hold on for a little bit.
That's right, because Ed's with us. More baseball after this.
Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we are back, and Ed Randall has been great to stay with us for this basically the entire show. But, Ed, one of our favorite topics that we came up with about a year ago, or maybe it was right before the football season started,
yes,
and the last baseball season, and we thought about this in regards, and what we did, Ed, was we excluded all the players that were either proven, you know, like A-Rod or Manny Ramirez, or under heavy suspicion, like a Bonds or a Clemens, and we ignored all these guys. And since me and my partner, John, were both around 45 years ago,
yeah,
we went over the last 40 years, so figure from 75 until the
present,
and we wanted to put together a list of the top 10 ball players, regardless if they were position player or pitcher or closer or whatever, the top 10. And for those reasons, we left Seaver and we left Carlton off it because they achieved a lot before 75, and I saw like the end of their careers. So we want your help at the end. We want your thoughts on the guys that we have on the list. This is the first 8 out of 10 that we came up with. This
right.
is the best 10 ball players in the last 40 years, excluding guys under heavy suspicion or proven with the steroid issue, performance enhancers, whatever you want. So the guys that we had make the list without question were Mike Schmidt, Johnny Bench, Ricky Henderson, Tony Gwynn, Ken Griffey Jr., Randy Johnson, Greg Maddux, and Mariano Rivera. And we have three names for the final two spots, and we want you to pick those two out of three. The three that we have remaining that we couldn't decide on were George Brett, Albert Pujols, and Pedro Martinez.
Pedro.
Now, Ed, the only one that my partner really asked me about was Tony Gwynn. And I might have talked to you about this briefly when we had met at a Ranger game early in the season. But the reason I put Tony Gwynn on there, aside from 8 batting titles, leading the league in hits 7 times, 5 gold gloves, well over 3,000 hits, 300 stolen bases, was that his career batting average, Ed, is in the top 20 all time.
338.
I think you should talk about this on your show one time. I can't make the topics for Talking Baseball on the Fan, but, Ed, if you go through those top 20 batting averages of all time, I would say about 17 or 18 of those guys were born in the late 1800s, okay? And the other guys are Ted Williams. He was born in 1918. I think Ted Williams is the second youngest on that list. Tony Gwynn is the only guy to start his career after 1940, Ed, that is on that list of best batting average, top 20 all time. That's why I put him on this list. Do you agree, or do you think there's somebody else? Do you understand where I'm coming from with the start?
The debate was that. It was also with George Brett. That was it, too. But, I mean, Brett, 3,154 hits.
Well, we're going to get to Brett because he's going to pick the two or three. But, Ed, don't you find that fascinating about Tony Gwynn? Because nobody talks about him the way they talk about, like, a Ted Williams, right? Are you there, Ed?
I was going to say that the tragedy about Tony Gwynn was that he played in San Diego, one of my favorite cities.
Right.
But had he played in a major media market, New York, Chicago, Boston, Los Angeles, the perception about him would have increased. It would have increased a thousandfold. He was unbelievable, especially with establishing the 5.5 position when you keep score. 5 is the third baseman, 6 is the shortstop, and the way he would shoot balls between shortstop and third base,
right.
unlike anybody else. And he was just phenomenal. You couldn't defense against him. He came up as a poor defensive outfielder. He won 5 gold gloves. He was just a phenomenal batter, just outstanding.
He might be the best hitter I've seen in terms of just hitting for average, especially when you really think about it, he played during that entire steroid era anyway. I mean, he started his career and played through the entire 90s. So I don't really care that he only had maybe 100 or 120 home runs. I mean, the guy won 8 batting titles and a .338 career batting average. Ed, there ain't a guy. Nobody has seen a guy that's my age that hit for average. I mean, Rod Carew and Wade Boggs were great hitters for average, and they were 10 points behind Tony Gwynn. That's how great he was.
They were tremendous hitters. Both Carew was outstanding. Boggs was amazing, got a late start on his career. Brett was great. Didn't have the high average like the other guys did.
Right.
But those are probably the 4 best hitters of the modern age.
Right. Well, I mean, just in George Brett's defense, because I do like Brett.
He was great, yeah.
He was the first player to have 3,000 hits, 600 doubles, 100 triples, 1,500 ribbies, and 200 steals.
No, I ain't taking anything away. But we're making.
He's got to be on that list, in my opinion. But we're gonna let Ed.
Yeah, Ed. Do you think there's anybody else we should exclude? Like, if you wanted to put Brett, Pujols, and Martinez, all 3 of them on, would you take somebody off of the 8 that we have already?
No, not off that list of guys that you have. I would probably I'd probably add Brett to it first.
So George Brett, we would put him in there definitely, number 9. Okay,
yeah,
I agree with that because I thought George Brett, maybe not as defensively dominant as a Buddy Bell or even like a Craig Nettles was great at third base, not as defensively dominant, but he proved himself with,
he
probably won a gold glove or so. But like you said, the hitting ability, some power at times, certainly drove in runs. And that 1 year, I'll never forget, 1980, when he almost batted 400. That was very exciting to watch. And the closest I've seen somebody come. I was really rooting for him that year. How about yourself?
He was phenomenal that year. And one of the tragedies of the suspension of the 1994 season was that we never got to play it out. And Tony Gwynn was hitting .394 when it stopped.
That's right, yeah.
And he was... But you understand my theory on giving Gwynn a spot before Brett with the top 20 of all time. Do you think that makes sense?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
Because I've always looked at it. If somebody did something that nobody else could possibly do, then you got to put a little more of a higher grade on that. And I didn't really realize until I went through it, Ed, and I started to look at the date of births of everybody, Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, you name it. I mean, everybody born basically in the 1800s. And isn't that amazing? That Ted Williams, the youngest of the other 19, he was born in 1918. And then Tony Gwynn, who's born, what, in the 50s?
I mean, 1957, 58, something like that.
I mean, it's amazing. I really am. So, okay, but we agree on Brett because we're going to put him at 9. Now, for the 10th spot, what would you do in terms of making the determination with Albert Pujols and Pedro Martinez? Because Pedro might be the best little man pitcher I've ever seen in terms of power from a small frame. But Pujols, I've always heard the comparisons with Joe DiMaggio in terms of hitting, the home run Ribby and batting averages is his first 10 years. So how do you measure up those two?
Or is there another guy that we didn't put on the list that you think of, Ed?
No, I think, you've got Randy Johnson on the list. And that's very, very important. You don't have Nolan Ryan on your list, do you?
No.
You know what?
I threw him out there, but we, for some reason.
We left him off. I probably would give him a little more of a consideration. Like, the one problem was, when Seaver was dominating the NL, I saw, it seemed like Jim Palmer was dominating the AL. And Steve Carlton did some things on a lousy team that Seaver didn't do, but Seaver actually helped raise the Mets to prominence. So, but because Seaver had a lot of Cy Youngs before 75, because Steve Carlton did things before 75 with the big season on the last place team with the 27 wins, I chose to leave those guys off. And I left Nolan Ryan off, even though his career went much longer. I left him off. And listen, I know the thing with the one hitters and the no hitters. He's a freak of nature.
Seven no hitters. Right?
Actually, if you insisted on putting him on this list and leaving Martinez and Pujols off, I might, just because he's like the strong man in the circus. There's nobody like him. I know he struck out well over 5,000 batters, but he also walked about, 3 or 4,000. I mean, there was something about Ryan that had me keep him off. He didn't have the accomplishments individually. So I don't know. You probably saw more of Nolan Ryan when he was young. So give me some of your thoughts on Nolan and how would he measure up if we compare him with Pujols and Martinez?
I think Pujols is tremendous. He's gone by Jimmy Fox now. He'll probably finish in the high 500s, maybe the low 600s in home runs. Tremendous. Pedro, pound for pound, one of the greatest pitchers ever.
Right.
But Nolan Ryan has set a record that will never be broken.
I know.
And Pujols never did that, and Petey never did that, and that's why I think Ryan belongs. Just granted, he didn't have the fantastic record in terms of winning percentage, but my God, the guy pitched 26 years.
I know.
And when he walked off the mound in Seattle, he literally could not lift his arm. He threw his last pitch, and that was it. And I just think that when you've established a record that will never be broken, I think some consideration needs to be given to that.
You know what, and I think I have to be fair, because I was using the same argument on behalf of Tony Gwynn. In my defense, the reason we left him off was, one, he never led the league in wins, but I understand he pitched from some bad teams. But he didn't have the number of ERA titles like Pedro or Randy. He never won a Cy Young. I find that amazing, that Nolan Ryan never won a Cy Young award.
Well, he had a lot of, he had a lot of 17 and 13s and 18 and 14s and 16 and 12s. that was it. He was he never had light him up across the board statistics, but my God, he was just dominant. And now here we are.
He was
so many years after he retired. And still talking to guys who talked about the fact that he put the fear of God in them when you stepped in against him.
Right. Yeah. In my defense, because I am putting him on the list now, but the other reason was Nolan Ryan had two 20-win seasons in his career, and they were both before 1975. But I don't really care, because you've been the best guest I've ever had.
Ever.
So in your defense, we are going to put Nolan Ryan at number 10. So the list will be, the best 10 of the last 40 years will be Mike Schmidt, 10 gold gloves, and 10 gold gloves, 8 home run titles to go with his 3 MVPs. Johnny Bench, the 2 MVPs from the catcher position with the home run and Ribby totals and the 10 gold gloves. I mean, the best defensive catch I've ever seen. Ricky Henderson is the man of steel. He was number 3. And nobody will ever break that record. I know you know that one, because 1,400 steals, nobody even has over 1,000, no less, close to his numbers. And he also had, the runs scored and the walks and 3,000 hits. We spoke of Gwynn, Griffey Jr. You know what, Ed, the way you spoke about Pujols and the early part of his career, the reason we put him on was Ken Griffey Jr. might be the best player of the 90s period. I don't know if I saw a guy defensively and offensively as dominant as Ken Griffey Jr. Give me some of your thoughts on him.
Griffey was phenomenal, and it was just unfortunate that when he was traded back from Seattle to Cincinnati, it sure looked like this was going to be the guy who was going to go by Hank Aaron. He had every reason to believe he was going to be the all-time home run king, and he was going to get 800 home runs. And then he got, after having spent his whole career in Seattle, after having saved baseball in Seattle, gotten the new stadium built because of him, he goes to Cincinnati, and now he gets hurt all the time. And his career was cut short, and that was unfortunate. But a five-tool guy. He was tremendous. He made the game look easy, like Willie Mays did a generation before. And he was just phenomenal. And the most important aspect of his performance was there was never the taint of performance-enhancing drugs. There was never a whisper about that with him. I just want to ask you something about when you say Johnny Bench.
Go ahead.
Where's Yogi, and why isn't Yogi there instead of Bench?
10 rings. Too,
oh,
Yogi.
Because
ten,
we,
oh, before.
We, because we did the top 10 four players.
Right. From 74.
This is just of the last 40 years.
Right, 74. Right.
So it's from 75 to present. You know, if we went all time, you know, you got to talk about Yogi Berra and Roy Campanella. I understand all that. My dad's a big Brooklyn Dodger fan. So, you know, you bring up Yogi Berra, an awesome baseball player. Offensively and defensively, Roy Campanella also, I mean, he was big time. I think they both won three MVPs each in the 50s, no less. But we went from 75. We just went through the time that we could prove because we watched him play. So that's why we went from 75 to the present. And you're absolutely right about Ken Griffey Jr. It was a little depressing watching him go to Cincinnati. And then, you know, he had that big first year in Cincy, right? And he had like 40 homers and 120 ribbies. And then after that, he just dropped off, and like you said, with the injuries. But in the 90s, Ed, I mean, the Gold Gloves, the Silver Sluggers, the MVP, the 56 homer season. And he was never connected with performance enhancers, right? I mean, have you heard anything differently about that?
No, not at all.
I mean,
not
never.
No.
I want to ask you, does Mike Trout remind you a little of Ken Griffey now? When Griffey first came up, how Trout is taking the league by storm right now?
I think at a similar age, I think Trout is better than Ned Griffey.
Wow.
That's something else.
Yeah.
Griffey was terrific, but Griffey played with a lot more flair than Trout does. Trout doesn't do that. He's not going to make those catches that Griffey was making, climbing the wall as a kid at Yankee Stadium. That's not Trout's game. Trout is just phenomenal, but he's a different kind of player, I think.
Yeah, I think Trout, every time I watch...
Best player in baseball.
And it seems like every time I turn on a game, and I just happened to turn on the Yankee game today because they were on, but even when I turn on MLB Network to watch a game that's on involving LA or ESPN, Monday Night Baseball, whatever, it seems like he leads off a game with a home run. Or when I turn it on, he's hitting a home run. It's amazing. The kid's got such great power and great defensive ability at that age. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, really. It really is. Trout is just phenomenal. I was telling my Socia this morning that he first caught my eye, not at the plate, but in center field. There was a ball hit to left center field at Yankee Stadium. He was a rookie. And just to watch him run after it, it was just extraordinary to see that speed. At the time, they had Mike Trumbo and left, who really couldn't run. And Trout had to play both left and center field. And he just ran from here to Yonkers and made the catch and was just a phenomenal talent. And it's scary to think that he's going to get better. And he came into Saturday night's game with a .381 batting average, lifetime in Yankee Stadium. I can't imagine what it would be like if he played for the Yankees with his power. He got jammed on a pitch last night. He didn't even extend his arms and hit a home run into the right field seats.
Yeah, and he's so likable, too.
He's like,
just a great kid, you know? You see all the interaction on some of the commercials with him and young fans. And stuff. It was just
He's a good face for baseball right
he's
now.
He's a great face for baseball. He really is.
Yeah, he's a great face to baseball. Andrew McCutchen is a great face to baseball. And it's just amazing to look around now and see all these great young players that are 25 years of age and under that have come to the game and have really enhanced the game, and even a little bit beyond 25, guys like Buster Posey and Madison Baumgartner, and who's a better person than Clayton Kershaw?
Yeah.
Oh. They're just These are just phenomenal guys. Terrific people.
With Kershaw, I don't think we've ever seen what Kershaw. I mean, Kershaw is fantastic. It's every year.
Yeah, Ed, is Kershaw like a younger version of Koufax in terms of Cy Youngs and that kind of stuff?
Well, I think it's different. No, Koufax was a deity. Koufax was in a special place because he was raw power.
Right.
And Kershaw, that's not Kershaw's game. Kershaw has a greater variety of pitches than Koufax did. But when Sandy put it together for those 6 years, well, really five, 62 through 66, there was never a five-year period that was done. This guy got into the Baseball Hall of Fame with only 165 wins.
Wow.
And was out of the game at 30 because he couldn't comb his hair. That's how much pain he was in. And unfortunately, before the time of MRIs and Tommy John surgery and that sort of thing, who knows what Koufax would have gone on to accomplish. But he's much different pitcher than Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, his power just made his curveball even more deadly, right? Because he was
you couldn't stand at home plate and watch the curve.
Right.
It's like we were watching that Dellin Betances in relief today for the Yankees. He's throwing 97 and it drops that curve and it's paralyzing.
Right.
And Verlander was once like that at Detroit before he got these accumulation of innings, but. And Nolan Ryan was another guy. When Nolan Ryan threw you a curve, he was doing you a favor. Same thing with Koufax.
Yeah, like that, when Doc Gooden was young, before the drugs really took him, those first two years, I mean, I remember going to games, him always striking out 10-plus, but his curve also, right? I mean, just deadly. Forget about it. Especially when he was on with his accuracy, right?
Yeah.
Now, I was trying to compare Kershaw in terms of the Cy Youngs in a short period of time, like Koufax. I know Koufax is different, a lot prettier to watch. In terms of Kershaw, since you mentioned it, that they are different, doesn't Kershaw, to you, have one of the most awkward deliveries that you've ever seen?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of them that have awkward deliveries. You know, we were used to in the old days with drop-and-drive guys like Seaver and Kuzman. And,
right.
We don't see that anymore. Now they're throwing straight up. And maybe that's why they're all getting hurt.
Right.
I don't know. But the manner in which they're pitching, the physics of it, is a lot different than it used to be. And, Kershaw has a herky-jerky delivery. My God, it works.
It's amazing because it looks like it's painful to watch, whereas to take a local guy, I think Matt Harvey has some of the best balance and control in his windup and delivery.
Well, I apologize to my audience because when I first saw Matt Harvey pitch for the Mets, I said on my show, he's got perfect mechanics. He'll never get hurt.
Yeah.
Well, then he gets hurt. And I got on the air and I said, ladies and gentlemen, I owe you an apology. I said, I thought Matt Harvey would spend his entire career on the mound, would never have a serious injury. I have no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to baseball. How did he get hurt?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not your fault.
He's got perfect mechanics.
Right. It's not your fault. He's got one of the prettiest deliveries
I've ever seen.
Like, he's so efficient. He doesn't waste any energy, and yet he gets hurt. You can't explain it sometimes. That's just the way it is.
I think the Mets are going to have the best young pitching staff in baseball.
It's very good between DeGrom and Harvey. I mean,
Wheeler's out for the year. Wheeler's good enough. This kid Matz comes up.
Yeah, but you know what, Ed? One more young guy I wanted to mention because you were talking highly of Trout, and rightfully so. But Harper's 22 years old now. Bryce Harper, the year he's having this year, what do you see for him going forward? Because this is, 19 home runs, and we're just into June.
Well, he's still a baby, and we've been waiting on this since he came up when he was 19.
Right.
And he's starting to fulfill the promise that people have expected of him. They put the burden of very unfair expectations on the kid. But more importantly than anything is he's become a lot more selective at the plate. His on-base percentage is phenomenal, and that is why he has become so selective. I think that part in part has led to this incredible productivity that he's had so far, and he's only going to get better.
He is a powerful force, and I'm hoping he does a lot of things. I mean, I want to see the Mets succeed more than Washington, but I'm hoping he does some good things for that city in terms of baseball because Strasburg, he's been battling through a lot of injuries. He's hurt again now. And it's a shame because he was like lightning in a bottle when he first came up too. So now Ed, with our list, we had Griffey, and then 6, 7, and 8 were Randy Johnson, Greg Maddux, and Mariano Rivera. And we had you select the final two, wind up being George Brett and Nolan Ryan. The only other guy I wanted to talk about on that list, and we're glad that you didn't object to it, because Mariano Rivera, and he was the deciding factor with putting a closer on this list, Ed, he only gave up 11 earned runs in 141 postseason innings. Is that one of the most amazing stats you've ever seen or heard?
Yeah, he was unbelievable. They don't if you had to pick one player as to why, with regard to how, who was the most influential person in winning 4 World Series in 5 years, that's your guy. You can go on down the line with all the great players that they had. He was the ultimate difference maker. And when the money was on the tape, he was just incredible, and we may never see anything like that ever again.
I'd say probably not, Ed, because you've been following baseball a long time, and you know as well as me, this was another deciding factor in terms of his longevity. The way you spoke about Nolan Ryan, I mean, you know full well the life expectancy of a dominant closer, what is it, like 5, 6 years? I mean, this guy gave you, what, 20, almost 20 big years of closing. That is unheard of. I've never seen anyone do that, right?
Well, it just, when you look around at their franchise, at shortstop, they didn't have to worry about shortstop for 20 years.
Right.
Behind the plate, they didn't have to worry about a catcher for 16, 17 years. They didn't have to worry about a closer for all those years.
Yeah.
My God, the Yankees were good, but they were lucky.
Yeah, center field with Bernie Williams, he was there for a long time. I'm with you on that. And in terms of Mariano Rivera, I mean, he is
best.
A legend.
He's the best.
He'll never be repeated. It is impossible. I mean, think about it this way, Ed. He retired, and how long did they have Robertson for?
A year?
What'd they have? Now they're already the closer now, just like the Mets, Andrew Miller. This is his first year as a closer. He's doing a great job for the Yankees, right? But, I mean, there are already two closers within 3 years of Rivera leaving, right? And that's just the way it is.
We'll never see this kind of longevity again with Bernie in center field all those years, Posada behind the plate, and Mariano Rivera, and Jeter, of course. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I really want to thank you with all my heart for joining us 2 full hours of talking baseball. That's your show, but we had it tonight.
Yes.
With Sweeney and the Waz on Sports Talk 1240.
The legend, Ed Randall. But yeah. you want to give out the your foundation?
Yeah, give out the foundation site again, one more time for us.
Sure. Well, thank you both. It's fansforthecure.org. That's using the number 4, F-A-N-S, the number 4, and the words The Cure, T-H-E-C-U-R-E.org. It is a repository for prostate cancer information. We believe in zero tolerance. No man should die needlessly of prostate cancer. And we advocate for men beginning at age 40 that they go to the doctors every single year and they take a simple PSA blood test and a digital rectal exam that will save their life the way it did mine.
And that's a quick test, right? It doesn't take long to get that test done, right? Just go to your doctor.
The most important thing is to consult your doctor every single year, especially if you've had a history of prostate cancer in the family. That's critical.
Thank you.
The physical with blood work and all that should get you started in the right direction, right?
Right. A simple PSA blood test was what saved my life.
Yeah.
Nothing more.
God bless you, Ed. Listen,
you're
welcome back
anytime
you like. And if you ever need help on a special event with volunteers, you get a hold of me and my partner. We'd be more than happy to help you out in any way. And I'll talk to you later in the summer, early fall, about something for your foundation in terms of raising some money. Something I want to give you as a personal thank you for coming on the show.
Give us a shout out when things going on, and we'll get some stuff going on through the radio station as well.
Great. Great. John, Derek, great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, Ed.
And folks, that's it. The great Ed Randall, sports historian from New York, author, writer, and talk show host, WFAN. And still, every Sunday,
so much knowledge
in,
right
talking
there.
Baseball with Ed Randall. He has a show, like he said, Nostalgia Show, on Saturdays on Sirius XM. You can catch him there, too. We're coming towards the end of our show. John, do you have anything to say before we part
ways? I like the list.
How about a couple of sports updates for you?
I like the list. I like Nolan Ryan from the beginning.
Yeah. He convinced me. I got to be fair about it. We'll put him on. The longevity might
be. If Ed Randall says Nolan Ryan's on the list.
How about this for any LeBron James Cleveland fans out there? heading towards the end of the third quarter, about 2 minutes to go. The Cavaliers lead the Golden State Warriors 62-56. LeBron has 26 points so far.
Takes him on his back.
10 rebounds and 8 assists. He's heading for a triple-triple, which he will get. I hope he wins the game. They got a guy, Tim Mozgov, who I've never heard of, at center, has 17 points. And that's about it. It's LeBron taking over, trying to do it all on his own for the city of Cleveland. If he can do it, he'll go down as the greatest basketball player ever.
That guy's their center, I think.
Because Michael Jordan, as great as he was, had Scottie Pippen and a host of others, did he not? This guy could do something super special here. I am fully behind it. King James, carry the load and get this win. They can go back to Cleveland tied at one. That would be great for the
city. I just want to say all the callers that tried to get in, thank you guys. Try to call back when we're on again. Ed Randall was on for the two. Thank you, Ed. And
we had to have Ed the whole time. We had to get to a lot of topics. We'll get those calls next time we're back.
I'm sorry, guys. And we'll touch the
call next
Belmont
week and harass whoever's. I don't know who's hosting next week. Call and harass them, or send us a message on Twitter, or catch us on Facebook at SportsTalk1240.com, and we'll answer your questions. Until next time, Sweeney and the Wads, we are out of here. Have a good day.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.